Meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education will please come to order. In accordance with the provisions of the New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act, Chapter 231, Laws of 1975, adequate notice of this meeting was provided through the annual public notice on April 25, 2012. May we please have the roll call?
Ms. Christie. Mr. Frieda.
Present.
Ms. Grant.
Here.
Mr. McGoy. Ms. McLaughlin.
Here.
Mr. Tiernan.
Present.
Mr. Sturgis.
Here.
Ms. Sullivan.
Here.
Mr. Dinkoff.
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you. I'd like to ask everybody to please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Recently, there were a few articles in some of the local papers pertaining to the Open Public Meetings Act and the Clinton Township Board of Education's role in that act. And I've asked the school board attorney, Mr. Vito Gagliardi, to join us this evening and to give a presentation on the board's position relative to the statements that were made in the local paper. Mr. Gagliardi, if you would, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Before I get to that statement, I just wanted to mention something in terms of the passing of the torch here. I know the meeting will be deemed a success if this is actually the last time I have to speak on anything. So while I have the floor, I just wanted to welcome the new superintendent of schools. We've spoken only a few times on the phone so far, also another good sign. I wanted to extend my best wishes to Mr. Del Sorti. I know he's going to end his service with us soon, and to welcome his successor. As I think many of you know, I've had the honor and pleasure of representing this board for about 17 years, so I've seen a lot of transitions, and I certainly hope this one goes as smooth as any of the district has experienced, and certainly congratulations to the board on your successful selection of these new candidates. Now, as to the matter at hand, when I last appeared here in person, which was in May, I was here then because of two issues which arose in terms of the board's conduct of the executive session process, both in terms of moving into executive session and the minutes kept of the executive session. Shortly before that board meeting, a citizen in this community filed a criminal complaint with the prosecutor's office alleging that the conduct of the board in moving into executive session merited some sort of criminal action by the prosecutor's office. At the same time, an individual named John Paff, who chairs the Open Government Advocacy Project and is certainly a very active individual when it comes to the Sunshine Law, had served on the board a draft complaint, I think not coincidentally, raising the same issues that another citizen thought worthy of a criminal investigation. We looked into the allegations as they related to the conduct of executive sessions at the board meetings held in February and March of this year, and it was our assessment that, in fact, technical violations were committed by the board in terms of how the board moved to go into executive session and the minutes that recorded how the board moved to go into executive session. Probably the most significant misstatement made by the citizen who made the complaint to the prosecutor's office was that the process we instituted in May in order to make it clear that the board should follow a certain process to go into executive session. The misstatement was that the process instituted was based upon a form prepared by myself, Mr. Del Sorti, and the board president and vice president. That statement, as reported, quoting that individual, is entirely false. In reality, what the board instituted was a form recommended by Mr. Paff, the chair of the Open Government Advocacy Project, who said, in so many words, if the board instituted that process, he would not pursue his allegations in the form of a civil complaint. So we instituted that. Mr. Pfaff was satisfied there was no civil litigation, and that's the format that the board has pledged to follow and passed a resolution that evening to say it was going to follow. We took that information, that is, that format, and the board's resolution saying it was going to follow that format, and we presented that to the prosecutor's office so they could consider the board's corrective action in the course of the investigation that the prosecutor's office was conducting. The prosecutor's office issued its finding by letter of July 11 of this year, sent to my attention with a copy to the complaining citizen. The prosecutor's office agreed with our assessment, that is, that the three executive sessions at issue were commenced with a flawed resolution that ironically was compounded by minutes that were more specific than the resolution. That is to say, ironic in the sense that the allegations that the board is somehow trying to conduct business in secret are belied by the fact that the business administrator made the minutes more specific than the actual motion to go into executive session to provide the public with the information that the citizen alleges the public was denied. So that, of course, while well-meaning, is not appropriate and is not the way it should happen. So the format presented by the Open Government Advocacy Project simply identifies the nine reasons why lawfully you can go into an executive session so that when the board makes its motion, it is very specific in citing one of the nine reasons and then providing as much information as possible without violating the right to confidentiality. So I will give you an example. If you're going to go into an executive session to discuss the superintendent's contract, that's a matter of personnel. It's a matter of contract negotiation. If your lawyer is involved, it's a matter of the attorney-client privilege. There might be three justifications for discussing that in an executive session. But rather than simply making a motion to go into executive session to discuss a matter of personnel, based upon the statute and cases interpreting the statute, you would be as specific as possible without violating the right to confidentiality. So you would say, moving to go into executive session to discuss a matter of personnel, comma, specifically the contract proposed for the superintendent of schools. So with that, you will honor the letter and spirit of the Sunshine Law, and then both the public who would be present for the meeting as well as those reading the minutes would have a specific understanding as to the purpose of the executive session. I am confident, supremely confident, that if you follow that format, this problem will not repeat itself. I would also suggest, not simply to the president of the board, but to the administration and the board members, if somehow in the zeal of a board member making a motion to go into executive session, they fail to follow that format, it's very easy for someone, you don't necessarily need to have a law degree, to say, what's the specific reason? But hopefully, in the course of following that format, it will become rote. The board members will follow the recommended prescription, which this board by resolution has said it would follow, and this will be a matter we need not discuss again. Certainly, if there are any board members that have any questions about this, I'm happy to respond to them. Otherwise, Mr. President, I hope that summary is sufficiently detailed to bring this matter to a conclusion.
Do any board members have any questions for Mr. Gagliardi?
I just have a question on one of the paragraphs.
One of the paragraphs where?
Of the report.
The prosecutor's letter?
Yes.
Okay.
Second page.
I have it.
I guess versus the enforcement action is separate and apart from a civil action that any person may bring for injunctive relief, I guess like a tort law, defamation. Is that what that means? Could you explain that better?
Sure. The civil action referenced there, when you're alleging a violation of the Sunshine Law, you can bring a civil complaint. That's what Mr. Pfaff of the Open Government Advocacy Project had threatened. That's the sort of civil action they're discussing. So this enforcement action, meaning that the prosecutor's office is satisfied, but if a citizen were aggrieved, they need not report it to the prosecutor's office. They can simply commence a civil complaint like Mr. Pfaff threatened to do, but ultimately didn't do once we instituted his reforms. So that's the reference there. As far as, obviously, defamation and that sort of thing, are there other potential civil actions? There are. I don't think that's what is referenced there. Obviously, for example, if you were to violate the Sunshine Law by speaking about a matter that is a personnel issue that should be an executive session, and you were to discuss it publicly, there's potential civil liability there as well. So we're focusing only one end of that, which is going into executive session and doing that precisely. Obviously, there are other things that you shouldn't be discussing publicly that you have to go into executive session for, and so there could be civil actions there. In fact, I should say, in tantamount to your question, in an effort to protect the board as an institution, as well as members of the board, it's why the president of the board asked me to be the one interacting with the prosecutor's office and ultimately to be interacting with the media. Obviously, board members, while they don't shed their First Amendment rights in serving on the board, at the same time, you don't want to be putting yourself into more difficulty than you've already found yourself. So Mr. Dinkoff requested that I take on that responsibility, and I did. Certainly, in speaking about things, if you want to speak about them, you should be clear that you're speaking as a citizen as opposed to a board member, because there are some things that you can discuss in executive session, and there's some things that you have to discuss in executive session. And as I said, we haven't really focused on that half of the law, but certainly there are civil remedies if that aspect of the law is violated as well. And that's just the general reference being made by the prosecutor's office.
Meaning, like, if we erroneously went into executive session when we shouldn't have, would that?
Right. That's what I'm saying. The focus of this inquiry is going into executive, if you went into executive session when you shouldn't. No one has suggested that went on here, but there's civil liability with there. On the other hand, not going into executive session when you should, for example, if you were going to discuss a special education program that might be under litigation, certainly various issues of personnel, you are obligated to be discussing things that are about someone's performance or student issues in executive session, and there could be civil liability if you get that part of it wrong. So that's just the general reference being made by the prosecutor's office. The potential criminal issue is separate and apart from any civil liability by going in when you shouldn't or by not going in when you should.
But civil action can come about.
Again, that's what Mr. Paff had threatened, and which we successfully avoided.
All right, thank you.
Certainly.
Any other questions for Mr. Gagliardi? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Gagliardi.
Thank you, sir.
Before we move on to the next item on the President's comments, I just wanted to repeat one of the things I just heard Mr. Gagliardi say. Very often, as a member of the Board of Education, we can receive a phone call from a reporter from one of the local papers. It's important for us to realize that if we respond to a reporter, that we have a responsibility to indicate that, yes, we are a member of the Board of Education, but we are not speaking on behalf of the Board of Education. And I think that would also be true for any letter that we might write to the editor. You have a right to express your opinion. You have a right to send a letter to the editor of any local paper. But I think it's very important to indicate in that letter that you are speaking as a private citizen and you are not speaking on behalf of the Board of Education. All right. Mr. Gagliardi will be available to answer any questions from the public during the public comments section. So if anyone in the audience has any questions to what he just reported to the board, you will have an opportunity to address Mr. Gagliardi in that respect. Moving on. I wanted to mention to the board, we need to complete the board self-evaluation. This is something that was online with the superintendent's evaluation. The members of the Board of Education did an outstanding job in completing the superintendent's evaluation this past spring. Every member of the board did in fact do that. We still need, as a Board of Education, to complete the self-assessment. And the reason that that's extremely important, if we're going to, and we really need to set goals for the 2012-2013 school year, it's important that we complete the self-evaluation prior to setting our goals. I've asked Dr. Clark to send out to all the board members the
There's access. In fact, Michelle Sullivan was very helpful to me in sending me the access information that the board received previously, and the self-evaluation spot is still open for board members to fill in. Tomorrow I will send you the access to that so you can complete it in a timely manner.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. The last item I have on my agenda is a formal introduction to our superintendent of schools. It's possible that we have some people in the audience this evening who have not met our new superintendent. She did start work on July 1st. I believe that the students in Clinton Township are very fortunate to have Dr. Clark as our new superintendent of schools. She comes to us after a distinguished career as a teacher, as a building principal, and as a superintendent of schools and in another school district in New Jersey. And after an exhaustive study and search to find a new superintendent of schools, I believe we're very fortunate to have her join us here in Clinton Township. And at this time, I'd like to introduce and turn the meeting over to our superintendent, Dr. Clark.
Thank you. I am very, very happy to finally be here because I had a long wait to get here. My district would not release me to come here as soon as I was hoping that they would. So it took me a while, and I traveled back and forth to come and talk to teachers and parents and different community groups, and fell more and more in love with Clinton Township. So I'm going to ask you to be a little patient with me, because I would like to tell you a story tonight. And I'll explain it and why I think it's an important story for us. But you know, teachers are teachers are teachers. And we love to read, and we love to share what we've read. There's a wonderful book on leadership called Leading with Soul by two men, Bowman and Deal. And they speak to respecting the culture of a district and the importance of storytelling in a district to enhance group memory of events and to serve as a reminder of how we want to be and what we want to emphasize. I did not come to Clinton Township thinking it was all perfect. I came knowing there was work to be done and knowing I wanted to do it. I also knew it was a good place where people cared about their schools and their children. So I am going to begin my time here with a short story that I hope we can pull out and reference when we need it. I see some teachers in the audience. I know they'll remember. And I see administrators, so I'm hoping you'll help us all remember with this too. The job of superintendent has many facets: communication, leadership, moving academic excellence, and modeling integrity, not only of the word, but of the process. My job is to keep us all focused on providing the best education we can for the students of Clinton Township while maintaining fiscal responsibility to our community. We may make some mistakes along the way to excellence, and when we do, I am asking you all to remember this story of the Snow Queen. And I would like you to share it and help us move forward in a positive way to stay focused on our work. For those of you who are not familiar with the Snow Queen, it is a tale in 7 different stories by Hans Christian Andersen. The first of the stories is what I'd like to talk about tonight. It's about a mirror and its fragments, and it holds an important message for leaders and followers about perspective. It begins with the story of a terribly bad hobgoblin, a goblin of the very wickedest sort, and how he created a mirror which had this peculiar power. Everything good and beautiful that was reflected, in it seemed to dwindle and to almost nothing at all, while everything that was worthless and ugly became most conspicuous and even uglier than ever. In this mirror, the loveliest landscapes looked like boiled spinach, and the very best people became hideous or stood on their heads and had no stomachs. Their faces were distorted beyond any recognition, and if a person had a freckle, it was sure to spread until it covered both nose and mouth. The hobgoblin brought this mirror to his school and told them that a miracle had come to pass. Now, he said, you could see for the very first time how the world and its people really looked. The hobgoblins in training were so excited that they carried this mirror all around, carrying it higher and higher through the clouds to laugh at the angels themselves. But it slipped from their hands and fell to the earth, where it shattered into hundreds of millions of billions of bits, or perhaps even more. It now caused even more trouble because the bits were smaller than a grain of sand and flew throughout the world. Once they got into people's eyes, they would stay there and distorted everything people saw. The bits made people see only the bad side of things, for every little bit of glass had the same power that the big mirror possessed. A few people got the glass splinters in their hearts, and that was a terrible thing, for it turned their hearts into lumps of ice. Some bits were turned into window panes, but not the kind of window through which you should look at your friends. Other pieces were made into spectacles, and evil things came to pass when people put them on to see clearly and to see justice done. Still to this day, there are fine bits of glass flying through the air. In the following tales, parts of the story, a little boy named Kay got some glass in his eye, and this changed his happy life into something lonely and sad until his best friend helped him remove the bit from his eye and see the world anew. I have taken out bits from my eyes, from my staff's eyes, my children's, and sometimes even from board members. It is a cautionary tale for all of us about how anyone's vision can be skewed and we can concentrate on the wrong things. As I begin my time here as an educational leader, I am reminding you to see the world anew. Let's take out the splinters and start with a fresh perspective. The Clinton Township schools are not perfect. Sorry, guys, but nor is the board. But we are working to be better and to do better. And I'm asking not to ignore problems, but to see them for what they are and change them into opportunities for good. Lean over, pluck out the splinter in your friend's eye, and let's focus on education. It may take a little magic and some courage, but I believe it will make all the difference here. I'd like to thank you for indulging me, and I hope you enjoy some of the piece of cake outside. And I hope that you remember this story, not just about a new superintendent in a leopard suit telling some crazy tale about a goblin and plucking splinters out of our eyes, but that it become some sort of folklore here. And I'm okay with how you interpret it, all right? As long as you keep plucking out the splinters And remember why we're here, to focus on education. Now, I'd like to introduce someone else to you tonight. Heather Spitzer is here tonight. She is our new business administrator, who is going to be starting with us August 1st. We wanted her sooner, but her district wouldn't release her either. So she's been working in and out of the district, coming on her days off to learn as much as she could, and we're really anxious to have her here. Although, I have to say that although knowing Anthony Del Sordi for a very short time, we love him too. He's been a great help to me in learning the ins and outs of the Clinton Township budget, and I know that we're going to miss him when July is over. So I want to make sure that we thank him for his service to the township.
Before you go on to the bridge closing,
mm-hmm.
Heather, would you stand so people could see you? And welcome.
I want to make sure we get this information out to as many people as possible. So if each of you here tonight could tell another five people and spread the word that we got information from the Department of Transportation that they're doing some improvements to the Cokesbury Road Bridge, which spans 78 in the borough of Lebanon. And that work is going to take place for a full year. It is going to start in August, and it will finish, hopefully, the following August. So we're going to put this information on the website. We have been talking to transportation, but tell your friends, because I expect no matter how well we plan this, there will be changes that happen at the last minute and delay buses and reroute buses in some way, shape, or form. So please be aware of it. Tell your friends. We'll be making calls about it. We'll be putting it on the website. Tell as many people as possible. And if there's any extra of these, share them with your friends tonight. I'd also just like to remind everybody that when I was approved here, the night I was approved by the board, they had a wonderful cake. And later on in talking with the teachers, we also had a wonderful meeting that night. And so we wanted to keep that good feeling going. And the teachers reminded me that I said that I would bring a cake to the first meeting. So I did not want to let my teachers down when they were expecting a good cake. So there's a cake outside. I know we're not supposed to be eating it in here, and you know the principal of the building is here, so we can't get in trouble. So please take some when the meeting's over or during a break. Take a few pieces home. Enjoy. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Clark. We're now at the first public comment, which is on agenda items only. So if there's anyone that would like to address the board, I see we only have one mic tonight, which is to my right. I would ask that you come up to the mic, state your name and address, and limit your comment, question, or concern to 3 minutes. This is agenda items only, and then we'll get into the first recognition of the public after that. Since Mr. Gagliardi was on the agenda, any questions about the Open Public Meetings Act can be addressed at this time also. All right, we will move to the first recognition of the public, and that can be any concern or any question or any comment that you have. Please feel free to come to the mic, and again, state your name and address, and limit your comment or question to 3 minutes. I guess everyone is anxious to get a piece of cake and have a short, relatively short meeting. All right. The next item on the agenda is the report of the interim School Business Administrator. And before I turn the mic over to Mr. Del Sordi, I wanted to add to what Dr. Clark had to say. And on behalf of the entire Board of Education, I'd like to thank you, Tony, for your service to the Clinton Township School District. You came to us in a time of need. We were having a great deal of difficulty getting the services of an interim business administrator. And we really appreciate the work that you've done for us, the time that you've put in, and also the work in helping us select not only a new superintendent of schools, but a business administrator who hopefully will be with us for an extended period of time. So, Mr. Del Sordi, the mic is yours.
Thank you very much for those kind words. There are a couple items on tonight's agenda. First of all, the board received correspondence from our law firm regarding a possible change in shared services and subcontracting for superintendents and school business administrators. This is something the Department of Ed continues to look at, and it's very apropos that our attorney provided this to the board because it could have a potential in the future years as to how the board, not only this board, but other boards of education, move forward with sharing one or both of those positions. I'd also, for the information purposes, announce that our next meeting is August 27th, 2012, and it'll be held in the library of the Clinton Township Middle School. The board will be moving some of our meetings to the library because usually this hall is very large, and it also gives the board members an opportunity to face one another as they talk about issues, which does not take place here in the auditorium. Again, if the public is so large that we do not fit in the library, then the meeting will be moved to this room here. So again, that'll be on our notices, it'll be on our website, and I'm sure we'll have a notice in the hallway for those of us who might forget that the meeting will be held in the media center. There's only one action item tonight, and that's action 13BA001, which has been modified. I'd like to recommend that the board approves the board meeting minutes and executive session for June 25th, 2012. We removed the minutes from June 29th, 2012. Those will be acted upon at the August meeting. So again, I'm only asking the board approve the minutes of June 25th, both regular and executive minutes.
We have a motion to that effect.
So moved.
So moved by Kevin Sturgis. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Rachel. Any discussion on the minutes of June 25th?
Mr. Yeah. President. Yes. While we're talking about minutes, I just wanted to mention one other thing, and it's not particular with regard to these minutes, but in going over the issues that were subject of the criminal complaint, I didn't want to overlook one last aspect of the form that Mr. Paff suggested and this board adopted, and it's that when you do make the motion in terms of being specific, consistent with law about what you're going to discuss, there's also a requirement of specificity where possible to identify when the action discussed in executive session is going to become public. Now, there are some issues, such as the example we were discussing, if you were talking about the program for a youngster with special needs that was subject to potential litigation, you're never going to discuss that publicly. There are other issues, personnel being a reasonable example, which eventually will be discussed and disclosed to the public in a public forum. So, if it's possible, you add that to your motion. And again, that's all reflected in the format we had. I just want to mention it publicly because it's not an aspect that we had discussed, and certainly want the public to be aware that that's part of the board's obligation as well. You can see them fulfilling that obligation here because you're making certain things public, but when you can identify for the public approximately when that's going to happen as you make the motion, that's consistent with your obligation under the law and with the format that this board agreed to adopt at its May meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gagliardi. Mr. Freda,
yes.
Freda, you have a question?
I'd just like to make if we can fix something on the 625 minutes. Under new business, at the last meeting I put forth two resolutions, and they were not approved by my fellow board members. But one of the motions I introduced under old business, as is clearly evident by the audio, and if you look at the agenda under new business from 625, from Mr. Frater requested that the following motion be removed from the table all the way through the actual vote. That was under old business, and the new business commenced with, upon the advice of our legal counsel, upon the advice of our board attorney, after some discussion, I was able to introduce a new motion under new business. So the two resolutions that were not accepted by my fellow board members, one falls under old business, which was when I tried to remove it from the table for further discussion, and the new business resolution that was rejected was a different language resolution. So I would like to respectfully request, being that we're on the hot topic of minutes, if we can get these properly reflected for the record to show where the two resolutions should be properly put.
We will make that correction.
Thank you.
Any other comments on the minutes? Seeing none, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
Ms. McLaughlin?
Yes, I can't hear. I can't hear you.
I'm sorry. Ms. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mr. Frater?
Upon adjusting it, yes.
Ms. Grant?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
With the adjustment, yes.
Ms. Sullivan?
Yes.
Mr. Dinkloff?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Facilities and Finance, Mr. Sturgis.
Our committee has had a chance to meet this month just to review some of the topics we're discussing in committee. We had discussion of the long-range facilities plan, reviewing the status of the plan, and we initiated the discussion about budgeting for future capital facilities projects. We discussed the rate of compensation for therapy services for a particular out-of-district placement. We reviewed the budget of out-of-district placements, and at this time, we are within our budget for out-of-district placements. Yeah, we'll continue to monitor this, but at this time, we're within budget. We discussed the status of the solar RFP. We've been reporting on this for the past 2 months. We recommended that that project be put on hold pending changes in market conditions, either from regulation or legislation improving the SREC market. Right now, we're in the mode of maintaining and holding on to the RFP and waiting for conditions to improve. We discussed a complaint relative to an HIV complaint in one of the wraparound programs.
Kevin, can you just speak into the microphone? I can't hear you.
The last one, Rachel, we discussed an HIV complaint at the wraparound program. We discussed the radon remediation testing that we've gone through over the past several months, specifically payment and short payment of some invoices. We discussed a large capital project that's nearing completion, which was the replacement of the roof on the Spruce Run School. This is a $450,000 project approximately. Right now it's about 95% complete. Our architect is inspecting and approving the work and approving the invoices in conjunction with our supervisor of buildings and grounds. Specific to this topic, I would like to make a motion to add an action item to introduce payment of an invoice, Tony, prior to the next board meeting. Would you like me to do that now, or?
You can indicate that it would be added to the bill list.
Okay.
FF002.
Okay. I would like to add to the bill list FF002 payment in the amount of $339,160. This is the initial payment for roof work. We have not extended any funds for roof work as of this date. That will leave approximately $127,000 held back while we are wrapping up the project and confirming that the roof is watertight. That concludes the discussions we had in committee. And with that report, I have 8 action items to move, 13 FF001 through 13 FF008. I need a second.
We have a motion by Mr. Sturgis. Do we have a second to that motion?
Second.
Second by Mr. McTiernan.
I'd like to also mention that on 13FF002, payment number 2458 is being removed from the list. So the final list will show the addition of the roof project, the first payment, and the elimination of item 2458. That's on the July bill list.
Any discussion on any of those items on facilities and finance? Go ahead, Michelle.
Kevin, real quick, I wanted to make sure I understood. This 339-160
Michelle,
is...
Michelle, I can't hear you.
You can't hear me either. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. That 339-160 is the first payment for the roof work, which we budgeted, but we hadn't paid yet, and we're holding back the extra 127 until they finish the job?
That's correct.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you.
Michelle, anything else? Mark, did you have a question?
No.
Okay.
No, we were just discussing we might need hearing aids.
It's hard to hear. Okay. And it's hard to hear for us. It might be hard to hear for the audience as well.
That's one of the reasons we're going to be moving to the library. Hopefully, we'll be able to hear better there, Jason. No. All right. Seeing no additional discussion. I'm sorry, Mr. Gagliardi, I thought maybe you wanted to.
No, sir.
All right, can we have a roll call vote on the items on facilities and finance, please?
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Freda?
Yes to all. I would just like to also add specifically at 001, the bills ending June 30th, 2002. While I do agree with the paying the bills in totality, I am specifically opposed to the payment for two of the services rendered regarding our board attorney's invoice 311-9699. Dated 4-4-2012, telephone conference with Jay Dinkoff with Mr. Gagliardi, and 4-16-2012, telephone conference with Jay Dinkoff with Mr. Gagliardi. For the record, I am opposed to those two payments. Thank you.
Ms. Grant?
Yes.
Ms. McLaughlin?
Yes to all.
Ms. Sullivan?
Yes.
Mr. Dinkoff?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Personnel and negotiations. Our chairperson, Mrs. Christie, is not here this evening. So I'm asking Mrs. Grant if she would help us with personnel and negotiations, please.
Sure. The Personnel and Negotiations Committee met with our new superintendent about 10 days ago, and we had a very long and productive, robust conversation. It's pretty amazing how much work she's gotten done in this area of personnel in such a short period of time. Some of the topics that we discussed during that initial meeting was the job description of the BCBA and what the certifications needed to be and qualifications needed to be. We talked about the hiring process and how Dr. Clark has made some changes into the hiring process and put some more boundaries into that. We have received questions from members of the public regarding the hiring of our new business administrator. So the Personnel Negotiations Committee felt very strongly that we should answer those questions to the public. So we put a draft together, which we sent to the board, two ways to address the questions. One is a letter to the editor, which the board has received. And so the personnel negotiations put that letter to the editor together, answering what we think are all the questions regarding the hiring of the new business administrator. When I contacted the Democrat and other newspapers about the content of that letter as far as how many words and formatting and what their timeline was for submission of a letter to the editor, they said a couple of things. One was that the actual letter itself needed to be in by today. And the second thing that they made very clear was that the letter could not exceed 500 words, and if it did, it would get kicked back to us. So the initial letter that the board got was, I think, Dr. Clark, it was somewhere like 576?
Yes, I think 573.
573. And we didn't want to take the chance of not having it accepted. So what we're going to propose, do you want to talk about that now, or?
Did you want to do it in new business?
Oh, we'll do it in new business. So we have a proposal. We'll talk about a new business about that just to make sure it gets in. We've also put together a document called Hot Topics that will address any of the questions as well that the public that we have heard may have had regarding the hiring